Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello and welcome to IMP's WWE Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. You can help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review. You can also give a donation directly through Red Circle and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Rich and James, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Arcus Things, Trish and Sarah, and Tunnel Talk, and other stuff. I was about to plug it and then realised... No, I can plug the match guide. The match guide's coming back. AW Tag Team Times with Floyd and Sam come to an end after 6 episodes. Possibly last one if you want to listen to their latest episode with the AW match bracket stuff. Sam has announced on the Discord that they're going to be doing the AW match guide. So if you want to go to the Discord and go to the AW match guide link on the Discord, you can go and vote for your favourite, I think, 15 matches. Up to 15 matches. Minimum of 10, maximum of 15 favourite matches from the first 5 years of AEW. And Sam will be doing a huge, putting all of that data together of everybody at Social Suplex. So all the hosts at Social Suplex will be putting in their votes to be there. So you can join us as well and also putting in your vote to get your voice heard in the AEW Match Guide massive 5-year all-time list. I'm assuming he's giving it a better name than AEW Massive 5 years all-time list. But you know, he is Australian, they call things weird things. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was 30 minutes, because that's all I need, baby. Oh no, the amount of people that will just immediately turn out after that bit. Oh no, I promise it gets better. I will now be jumping over to Smackers and Raw, because I've got a draft to talk about. That's my thing, that's what I get to talk about. I get to talk about a draft which makes no sense to me in format and execution and everything. But, you know, it ties in SEO-wise with the NFL draft, so that's the only reason it exists. Anyway, let's jump on over to WWE's draft. Let's start with SmackDown. The SmackDown Night 1 of the WWE Draft 2024. Stuff that you're actually interested in. There were like segments and matches. SmackDown got quite a lot of critique of not really having that much wrestling on it, but it did have like some segments that it got, building to Cody Rhodes versus one of the NXT call-ups, Tiffany Stratton facing Naomi, LWO's Ray Ray and Dragon Lee versus Legado de Fantasma's Angel Umberto to do the Carlito reveal. So there's a few segments going on, but the main draw for SmackDown was the draft, and I feel like this is why SmackDown took the bigger hit than Raw in terms of just how the show felt, because Raw had more time to do wrestling. Whilst on SmackDown, when you're giving time to the draft to let that kind of breathe a bit, and you're going to do some of your talkie segments as well, there isn't that time for the wrestling. That extra hour on Raw really helped with the flow of the show. Whilst with the 2-hour SmackDown, this format of the draft just doesn't work. So for me, the absolute best version of the draft is not this. It's not what they're doing here. 100% not. With just random folk coming out to present the draft. And to be honest, that's like the least of this format's problems. Like, the whole structure of WWE's draft like needs a complete overhaul. Because arguably, this is the most boring way to present a draft. Such a strong vibe of like, just all of this could have been revealed on Twitter. All of it. All this could have just been an email. For me, like on a base level, for every single wrestler that's staying on the same show, what's the effing point in all of this? Why are you wasting time revealing any of this? Just the brand changes being announced was a far better watch. I personally really liked the version. Oh, I feel like it's a mixture of what I like. There's the version from the 2016 draft in 2017, where whenever you got a call-up like post-WrestleMania or if you got it in the draft, people would just show up on that show, meaning that you weren't tuning in to see somebody get announced to be switched. You were tuning in to see somebody else just suddenly show up on the other show. And that's how you know a change has happened. And I personally really liked that version. It's not as sports draft feeling, but it's way more entertaining to watch when it's not... You don't know who's going to be changing brands. It's you don't know who's going to be showing up. And that is far more interesting to watch than office and old heads reading names off a spreadsheet. That is just far, far less interesting. I understand it's closer to what the NFL draft is, and the entire point of this is to play off of the Google SEO for the draft, meaning if they're searching for the NFL draft, then this might also come up in the SEO search terms as well. But in terms of how entertaining a show it makes to watch, it's incredibly boring. And I've felt that since its inception. Like, it's been like tweaked upon and ironed a bit since the first go at it under Vince. It's better than it was in 2019. God, the shake-up. This is better than the shake-up. Yes, this is bad and it's boring, but it at least has some form of grounding. This is better than the shake-up. This is not the worst version of the draft. The shake-up was the worst version, no question. And I know a lot of people didn't like the randomizer version because it didn't make much of logic sense, as if where it's flicking between the brands. But I like the presentation and the style, because that was somewhat like a prelude to what we got with when somebody would just show up on the show. What I do like about this one is the general managers playing to try and get certain stars. But you need consistency. For people, so something like this draft, putting Jade Cargill, Bron Breakker, Andrade in this draft makes no sense to me when they had whole angles just like 2-3 months ago where the general managers playing all they could to try and sign these people to a contract, only for Bron Breakker and Andrade to switch brands anyway. So what was the point? Like, my immediate thought was, well, obviously, like, outside circumstances, they realised maybe that Bron Breakker needed to be on Raw to be able to develop as a wrestler. Well, SmackDown just doesn't give him the time. He can do squash matches on SmackDown. It's time for that. But he hasn't got the time to properly develop. On Raw, he will have that. Whatever he's building with Sheamus, he will have the time to do that. So that's like a little thing of they realise, oh, crap, we made a mistake, but we can just switch him over in the draft, like it's fine, whatever. However, that then negates the whole importance of the general managers vying for their contracts to sign these people when 2/3 of them switched brands immediately in the draft. Just like, immediately, little things like that. Those three people who were built up of massive stars and they signed their contracts, just don't put them in the pool. Those general managers put in loads of effort. Because it's the same, it's the carryover from the Vince era, where general managers weren't characters, they were plot devices. Because Adam Pearce would switch between face and heel, whatever the plot between the wrestlers that was showcased needed. He wasn't a character, he was a plot device, whatever plot it was, which means during the night he would switch roles constantly. He wasn't a good guy or a bad guy, he was the authority. And he was perfectly able just to switch whatever. Well, Triple H has put in a lot of effort to make these general managers consistent characters. And actually, when they make a decision as an authority figure, you understand kind of where it's coming from, because you understand that these are actual characters. They've got actual motivations and ways of dealing with the wrestlers. But you can put all of that into feeding into the draft, is my main point. If you're going to be doing this with a draft and you're going to be having the general managers going against each other to try and get these wrestlers to join the different brands, little consistency things would be great across the rest of the year, or at least just building up to this. So if you know the draft is happening because you know when the NFL draft is happening, don't do the contracts shit before WrestleMania, because the contract shit will all get negated when you do the draft, because you're going to put everybody into the pool. Don't do that. Number two, there's no need to reveal a pool. Is in terms of you don't know who's going to show up on what show. If you don't reveal a pool, then you don't need to put everybody into the pool to then reveal that people are staying on the same brand. Don't do any reveal for anybody staying the same place. Get rid of all of that. Don't reveal a pool. Just have the trade appear on the show that's happening. So when I'm watching SmackDown, I want to see who is now signed to SmackDown. I don't care about any of this other stuff. You can announce that they're the first draft pick, because you control everything, every ounce of creative part of this. It's like, how do I know who the first draft pick is? You can just say it, just out loud. And this person was the first one in the draft. They start off with a SmackDown guy, and out comes SmackDown's biggest star, the first person of the draft. My point being, in terms of making the show interesting, it's incredibly boring just to come out and have a old veteran say that Bobby Lashley is staying on SmackDown. We've drafted. It's like, there's absolutely no point in telling me any of that. I don't care. Like, cool, whatever. And you heard that in the crowd where the Dudley Boys came out to do their one, and every single reveal was somebody staying on the same brand, and they're playing it up as, oh, this isn't any ordinary draft, because you've got to play a hand to try and keep somebody to stop the opposition from getting them. You've tried to make it sound interesting, but it isn't. At least I'll give them kudos there. Through the commentary and presentation, they tried to make the format of the whole pool being there and of brands trying to keep wrestlers as well as getting new ones, they tried to make it sound interesting. The main problem is in the entire format, and like the core structure of the idea is just nowhere. There's much better versions we've already seen in WWE. Actually, no, there's elements of a good draft in there. And I feel like the best draft is in a mixture of what we've got now and maybe the 2016-17 version. Because really, that's what the randomizer essence was. They just took out the randomizer part. And this has got the... You've got the actual character GMs, and you put that on top of the 2016 version of the draft where you would tune into the show and see new people turning up, so you found out who had been drafted. I like that. Instead of seeing the draft take place in front of us, we see the results of it. And I find that far more interesting. However, that's not how the NFL do it. And they're just emulating the NFL. There's Google, going for Google SEO, so everything I said means nothing. None of these improvements will really be taken on. I expect next year to be just as bland and boring.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Because it makes sense for the NFL to present it like this. It makes no sense to present WWE show like this. Well, even if I'm right, the whole point of the NFL draft is you're drafting from the college football. So what we saw with the NXT stuff happening was closer to how it works. But there was no like negotiating in terms of like if you Raw take this stable and you get like six on one of the rounds, Raw got six people because they drafted two stables and SmackDown got two stars. But some form of logic of that's part of the negotiation. Or SmackDown saying, I'll let you take these two full stables, but I get an extra NXT pick. Or something like that. Which, if I'm right, that is how the NFL draft works, where it's essentially almost working favour. Like, if you do this for me, then I'll do that for you. You can get this awesome guy, but I want two of these pretty good guys. Or something like that. Anyway, I don't watch the NFL, but if I'm right, that's how the draft works. Whilst this is just like the most boring spreadsheet version of that. It's so bland. Also, there's the thing of if you're calling somebody the first round draft pick, but half of the roster isn't available to draft, then what does that even mean? You can call them a first round draft pick because they are a first round draft pick, but you've got two first rounds. It makes it overly complicated and weird. Anyway, so first round was Bianca Belair and Carmelo Hayes to Smackers and Jey Uso and Seth Rollins to Raw. Immediately having an NXT star as a first round draft pick is a huge way just to really shoot them into the show, and as like a big deal from the get go. And they had Carmelo Hayes main event with Cody Rhodes as well to help establish him. Having a main event with a world champion on your first night, really not a bad way to help establish yourself. So it's like a good start. Oh yeah, that was also presented by Triple H and Cody Rhodes. Second round presented by Michelle McCool and Tori, Randy Orton and Nia Jax to SmackDown, Bron Breakker and Liv Morgan to Raw. Which means one keep and one save for both. Cool, whatever. Von Baker going to Raw again. I've already talked about that with the contract not making sense, even though it does make sense in terms of what show I would prefer to see him on, because which one's going to give him the better room to grow as a performer and as a character. Raw makes all the sense in the world. So it's a right switch. It just negates all of the contract stuff. Anyway, the Dudley boys, they got to announce everybody staying in the same place. A waste of time. LA Knight and the Bloodline to SmackDown. Ricochet and Sheamus to Raw. I honestly don't understand why they can't just draft the brand swaps. Only announce the brand swaps. This entire format, I don't like it. Fourth round, JBL and Teddy Long. AJ Styles and Andrade are blue. Alpha Academy and Kiana James are red. Kiana getting a nice little package before getting interviewed at the NXT arena as well. This was the vibe nicked from the NFL, which I thought really works. Again, it's those college football kids getting a huge moment, and you got their girlfriends and their family all hugging them and kissing them in this absolutely huge moment. It's like, oh my God, I actually got drafted. Isn't that amazing? And they echoed that really well with what they were doing with the NXT. So whenever they cut to NXT, they really captured that vibe really well. It's just, you know, the rest of the draft is shit. It's just boring. In terms of the rest of the show, not like a lot to talk about, but Cody Rhodes, his build throughout the show as he started off with AJ Styles and he ended up main eventing against Carmelo Hayes. The show kicked off with Corey Graves mediating the contract signing between AJ Styles and champion Cody. AJ highlighting that this match is the first time meeting for Cody and him, both having missed each other's paths, proving themselves outside of WWE. AJ bringing up the lessons Dusty taught him Papa Rose Watt did have a spell behind the scenes in TNA. Pure babyface Cody with a nice little response, telling AJ the true stakes of the match for him as a new champion, proving he has the shoulders to carry the weight of the championship. One of the more respectful contract signings. Cody's got a draft pick to announce. You can't be putting him through a table and crumple his shiny pressed suit ahead of this. Triple H out to present the pick with him and set up the main event. Mello out as the show's big first round draft pick, immediately shooting his shot at the champion. Leads us to the main event, Cody Rhodes vs Carmelo Hayes, just a wee little showcase for Mello, a nice warm up for Cody ahead of next Saturday in France. The springboard floating overhead into the DDT got a great reaction, Mello flipping out of the crossroads to hit a codebreaker, the champion moving out the way to avoid the nothing but net top rope leg drop, a funny little spot with both men having the same springboard idea. Perfectly timed so there was no danger. It just looked, I saw it get a gift or it's memed on Twitter, but out of context, it just looked a bit funny. As one goes for one springboard, floats over the other, as the other one does, as Cody goes for the Cody Cutter, just floating over Carmelo. But Cody landing a tad awkwardly on his shoulder after his Cody Cutter attempt flew over Melo. A perfectly fine main event. A fresh face, kinda, for Melo, who was on SmackDown for a bit and then just wasn't. Showcase to immediately make the minor draft changes felt. And that's the main problem with the draft for SmackDown. The changes felt minor. And yeah, it's been built up a bit, but then it comes to SmackDown and it felt all like minor changes. One thing I will applaud is making sure that the champions can't change brands. That felt like something that would be way more needed when the belts were blue and red, so you didn't get the awkward championship handovers. It's like, oh yeah, just don't put the champions in the pool. Problem solved. They're exempt. They can't be drafted. Elsewhere on the show, Tiffany Stratton faced Naomi for the chance to make the WWE Women's Championship match in France and make that a triple threat. Nia Jax immediately making her mark and taking out Bayley and Naomi at ringside. DQ to give Naomi the win, but Stratton hits the final message by nailing the prettiest moonsault ever for the second week in a row. But yeah, making something that difficult look that easy. It's quite incredible. Nick Aldis making the match a triple threat in Le France anyway. Solo Sikoa, he and Tonga get to continue their awesome build as these new menacing version of the Bloodline. Sikoa continuing to scare Heyman. The wise man explaining that the Bloodline weren't drafted in the first two rounds because Sikoa bringing in new lads means folk don't know exactly who they're drafting. And I like that logic. Plus also it's a nice little tease that there's still more new fellas to come in. Kevin Owens brawling at them looking for blood. In the next segment, brawling out onto the stage through the Kabuki Warriors Belair and Cargill corridor out through the stage. Solo and Tama too much, but Randy Pandy's there to even the odds. And for me, that's like a perfect little elevation, with KO finding an ally, giving us the perfect reason for Sikoa to bring in a third lad, who we might see in France. Teddy Long getting to announce the tag team match for Backlash as well. So that was nice. LWO's Ray Ray and Dragon Lee versus Legado del Fantasma's Angel Umberto. Dragon Lee getting his tag match after getting taken out before WrestleMania. Hilarious bump as Angel cheekily steps on the middle rope, sending Lee spinning out to the ringside for the ad break. I love that ad break bump. Dragon Lee hitting the Destino, called Project Dragon now. For the win, I say now, may have not paid NXT attention or Dragon Lee attention. I just written down Destino every time. I completely missed the commentary calling it something else. But the whole match setting up the reveal. Carlito, he won't be the baddie what did the beating of Dragon Lee. And they've typed it up on Raw as like, oh, isn't that interesting when they drafted the LWO? But Carlito hasn't been kicked out of the LWO, so he was counted as being drafted. Yeah, you've also got that random logic of drafting six people with two factions, but then also not drafting two people as a tag team. So even if you're not going to book Stark and Baszler as a tag team, why would you draft them separately when you can get them as one pick and then get a bonus person? Other notes. Bron Breakker, before getting drafted, speared the hell out of a handspringing Cedric Alexander. Also, I find it hilarious that now these kind of squash matches are being called speed matches by the fine folk of social media. During Breakker's replay, a quick Wyatt-style flicker of something. So that's continuing to happen and be set up. And there were also additional social media drafts for Smackers, the OC. So drafted AJ Styles without the OC. Whether they have been separated, so that kind of makes sense. The OC, Baron Corbin, Cedric Alexander, and Ashanti the Adonis. Raw, Baszler, Stark, Alba Fire, and Isla Dawn, and Ivar. Again, very weird for Raw. There was an opportunity to get those same amount of people with much fewer draft picks so you could get more people. But, you know, slots to fill, whatever. But that was the SmackDown draft. I feel like I agree with pretty much everybody else that it was incredibly underwhelming, and it felt like the changes were all minor changes, and they were delivered in a boring manner. So it didn't feel like that big a deal with the draft. Like, not a lot felt like it had changed. but also it was delivered boringly. So those changes that did exist weren't that exciting. And I feel, for me, that the main reason why I much preferred the idea of you don't know who's going to show up rather than you don't know who's going to get announced as being on a different colour now. One of the big things is just that you don't have much hype when you're watching the show. It doesn't really generate much interest or excitement. It's and that, for me, maybe that's the biggest problem with this. Like, yeah, watching the show itself is kind of boring, but it doesn't make you excited to watch the shows with the new stars on it, because it's just delivered so boringly. It's not hype building. And I feel that's its biggest sin, because the entire point is to try and get you excited for the new shaken up rosters. But you're not. It doesn't generate excitement, this format. Anyway, as I keep dallying on about this, I feel like I might have to do Raw a lot more now I've gotten all of that off of my chest. So, also, I don't know how much you're going to get. I've been talking for 25 minutes. I've pretty much done the entire show in this time. Anyway, let's jump on over to Monday Night Raw.
Jake complimenting the ring.
Oh, Jay now takes down Finn. Patted away on Balor. Logan Paul trying to get in the mix now.
Three Super Bowl rings to the head of Jey Uso. Just like that dumb Jay thing. Braun Strowman!
Jey Uso's got backup!
And Logan Paul has seen a monster!
The monster of all monsters!
Look at this big son of a bitch!
Monday Night Raw's Braun Strowman!
Night 2 of the WWE Draft 2024 in Kansas City, Missouri. I only learned this year that Kansas City isn't in Kansas. Made sense in my head. It's this Kansas City. It's the city of Kansas, right? Nope. America's weird. Why do you have more than one Kansas? Stop being weird. I know you're a big area, but come on. The draft. So let's just bash through them. First round presented by Stephanie McMahon. Imperium and Damage Control to Raw. Cargill and Kevin Owens to SmackDown. Second round, Logan Paul and Nitro Speed. I'll get to their bit later. CM Punk and Braun Strowman to the red side. The Pride, which is Bobby Lashley's stable. And Tiffany Stratton to the blue. Third round by the APA, reminding us just there's their awesome theme plays. You remind us, like, yeah, Death Rebel is shit. They are shit. LWO and Drew McIntyre to Raw. Legado de Fantasma and Shinsuke Nakamura to Smackers. Fourth round presented by London Braves and Teddy Long. Judgment Day and Ilya Dragunov to red. Naomi and Chelsea Green and Piper Niven to blue. I put multiple ands in that, and that did me in. Fifth round, the Dudley Boys. New Day and Lyra Valkyrie. Le Rouge. Pretty Deadly, and Candice LeRae, Indy Hartwell, Aqua. And the sixth round, filmed by Piers and Aldis, The Final Testament and Bronson Reed, Aichi, DIY, and Blair Davenport, Ayo. Monday Night Raw was a lot better, mostly because there were actual changes that felt like, when I say structural changes, I mean, you got stuff like guaranteed that the LWO and Phantasma feud is now dead because they're on separate brands, is completely shifting them about, meaning you've got a completely different mid-card. I know we'd already done Legado and the Pride angle started, but that was like one segment. So it still feels like something new. So there were three NXT call-ups instead of the two, which is an improvement. And they felt like they were like bigger changes just because of the stable switching brands, but Final Testament and LWO. So it felt like there's actually been shifts on the show. You're going to be seeing new people from this version of... From this night, there were actual changes to see something new. Obviously, all of the big players stay exactly where they are. Nobody big changed brand. Every single big star or main event person is staying where they are, which to me felt like, just don't put them in the pool. You have to announce that everybody's staying the same way. It did lead to great character work, so they tried to at least use their presentation to then feed into some of the characters, like Drew McIntyre and CM Punk is really the one I'm picking up on, and a Judgment Day using their stuff as well for Damian Priest to run on his guys. It's like, well, yeah, of course he got picked late. In terms of the structure of the show as well, the walking into the arena opening incorporated into actual character stuff, with Logan Paul arriving with Nitro Speed and Patrick Mahomes, who I did watch this year's Super Bowl, so this was really my first time properly learning about who Patrick Mahomes is. And so at least I knew coming into this that he's bigger than just a talented local lad. As in, generally heralded as one of the best in his sport, really, really respected. Which made even less sense that he was doing the stuff with the heels. But still, anyway. He has a chinwag with Priest as he's welcomed by the Judgment Day. And Colin McAfee's welcoming was also mic'd up for the crowd to hear too. Just like nice little changes which make all the sense in the world to me. The show kicked off proper with the new Women's World Champion, Becky Lynch. A quick wah-wah with the crowd, setting herself as once again being a fighting champion. Liv Morgan, the obvious first choice for a feud. Last week I was talking about champion Becky being able to elevate both Liv and Nia. Like, yep, Naya immediately got drafted to the other show, so we've only got tonight for that. It's like, oops, oh well, that's my idea, Dad. Morgan using the fact she was actually able to take down the previous champion to step to Bex. Nia Jax similar in her shit-chatting, setting up her versus Liv for later. So if we jump to Liv Morgan versus Nia Jax, the two lasses I thought would be built on Raw this summer, instead getting their final clash before the draft kicks in. Powerful Jax dragging Liv across the ring. Morgan the bugger that just keeps getting back up. The lass consistently back to her feet, even powerbombing Nia off of Brett's rope. Tiffany Stratton shown at ringside throughout, even cutting to her after said powerbomb. Building to Naomi making a run in attack, instead flowing into the baddie Jax losing via the shenanigans. Morgan staggering with a codebreaker before rocking with the Oblivion for the win. A much needed win for elevating our sure, soon number one contender for Becky. Actually, in fact, it was immediately confirmed backstage with Becky directly telling the lass a nice little tease for Lynch versus Damage Control 2. Liv Morgan, Becky Lynch seems to be the immediate, and Damage Control seems to be maybe the longer term over the course of the summer. Maybe for SummerSlam we've got EO versus Becky Lynch. But I think my main critique of this is I'd like Liv Morgan to get a slow build, and I'd like the end destination properly to be Rhea Ripley versus Liv Morgan. Character-wise, it makes way more sense than Becky Lynch versus Rhea Ripley. It makes more sense to me if Liv Morgan captured the championship and she actually reaps rewards from her bad behaviour in properly injuring Ripley. And over the course of the summer, we see her character established. My point last week was that I'd like a little bit more time of building Liv Morgan character because I feel like it's really finding its feet. The Ripley injury can be the perfect momentum to elevate her. Well, if we go straight into a title match, it could be a bit, if we just waited a little bit more time, if it was just bubbling a little bit more, just cooked a little bit longer, you could have properly crowned a champion and everything. Whilst now I'm like, I won't crown a champion now. But if you let it bubble for like a couple more months, even just one more month of just solid character stuff. The number one draft pick of the night, Gunther, cleaning up on his promises for the King of the Ring prelude, whooping against the last king, Xavier Woods, chopping the soul out of Woods, also targeting the lad's knee, the New Day fight having to really show itself as Gunther folds the chap like a pretzel, properly emphasised with the least subtle way via Kofi grabbing a towel to throw in, Xavier shouting that, no, I can do this, I'm going to prove that I was a King of the Ring for the reason, and I can show this. The fire igniting to amp the man up, only for Gunther to properly talk the hold on the knee even more. Commentary hammering home that Kofi did try to help, as Woods lays in pain, clutching his knee, completely just battered by Gunther. Statement made. Immediate favourite for the King of the Ring. And maybe this just is going to be Gunther just dominating. Just like, I said I'm going to win, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. And immediately just go to SummerSlam through that route. He wins King of the Ring. He goes to SummerSlam. Bada boom. New champion in the room. But also this is perfect to just build up Gunther as this immovable object for the King of the Ring as he just flies to the main event of the King of the Ring show. But then you build up someone else to be the underdog. And maybe they can beat Gunther as well. I'm thinking, in my head, I'm picturing how they built to Will Ospreay versus Shingo Takagi in the Best of the Super Juniors. Yeah, I'm going back, and I'm going to Japan. But Shingo, I can't remember if Shingo was undefeated, but he was just this absolute hoss. Anyone who watched him going, that's not a junior. That's not a junior. If anyone's seen the film Benchwarmers, he's not 12. He's not 12 at all. But that is... feel like that works really well in terms of like you build the beast, but then you have this really talented guy that everyone's behind. I don't know who that would be, because they've been doing some like behind the scenes build for Ricochet, but I feel like that's not there. I don't know who you would place in that King of the Ring potential winner, but you know, you've got the big baddie built already. Who do you build as the underdog? Logan Paul and Nitro Speed, their segment was interesting. Immediately switching from their draft announcement into an in-ring chinwag angle, which again was weird, because they've got Patrick Mahomes, who's a hometown favourite, but he's going to be associated with Logan Paul, and he's going to give the rings to try and do the punch to Jey Uso. Like, it was very strange. Jey Uso was out to tease, knocking the yeet out of Logan Paul, which again, another weird part, is that Logan Paul's not going to be on this show, so you're teasing Jey Uso versus Logan Paul, which is two lads on separate brands who aren't going to see each other. It's like, what are we even building to here? What I did learn was that this was actually an angle built by the Prime Lad, so it's like it's more of a sponsored angle, because Patrick Mahomes is part of the Prime company. I don't know at what level, but I think he's probably an investor with them. So this was a sponsored angle between all of the Prime lads who are all in on the Prime sponsorship. So that's why the association was what it was. But it makes no sense on the show, but it makes sense off the show. It's like, oh, okay, this was a sponsored segment. That's why it was weird. That makes sense. A nice little distraction for Finn and JD McDonagh to deliver a little Irish judgment. Patrick Mahomes gives Logan Paul his Super Bowl rings to strike with, only for it to all go terribly wrong. Down falls JD, over-the-top shock faces from everybody in the most cartoony way possible, including Jey Uso, when Braun Strowman returns. A wee ringside stare down between Patrick Mahomes and Braun Strowman was not on my bingo card for tonight. Also, Braun Strowman, cut your hair, lad. What's going on here? What is going on here? Chad Gable then with a silly little backstage segment with Awesome Truth, but ending perfectly with Sammy delivering a big shiny boot to the man's face from offstage right, setting us into the Intercontinental Championship, Sami Zayn versus Bronson Reed. Decent little middle of the show TV telly bout, commentary setting this up as a potential draft shakeup where were we to win and suddenly send Zayn to the draft pool, anything can completely shift about. They tried to make it interesting. Just at its core, it's not an interesting format. Big boy Bronson with his power spots, big bombs and whatnot, but Chad Gable charges in to get his revenge, ends in DQ as poor Chad Gable gets his revenge with that big boot from earlier, bubbling relatively nicely. Also, Chad Gable got to be a dick later as well, to everybody else. I think he's continuing to be great with his new utter dickhead, like toxically crapping all over Alpha Academy. It did mean that one of the actually booked matches for television was Miz and R-Truth versus Otis and Akira Tozawa. Starting in the ad break, like, they knew. They knew that this was like, we're not putting that shit on television. They're like, but he did though. He did though. Even if he started it in the ad break so it was shorter, he still put it on television. He still did it. After his draft pick, Drew McIntyre was out to whine about being drafted in round 3 after CM Punk. Drew chatting shit over Punk, as has now become the usual. When CM Punk's music hits and you think, oh, is this like a psych out or whatever? Like, nope. Surprising us all, appearing in a fancy skybox suite to shout out to the Scottish lad. Charging around backstage, trying to find Punk's skybox. Slamming a signed photo down instead. Framed really nicely overlooking the arena from the box as Punk's music hits. In terms of like whether I enjoyed the segment or if I did think it did a good job or what, for me kind of fell secondary because it just really hit me while I was watching this that the modern production does a really good job of showcasing all the different fan perspectives. Like for me, that really feels like a focus of the directive, just to showcase all the different perspectives from the fans. And we've got this fancy skybox stuff here. We've had the different crowd shots from all the different locations, be it ringside, be it higher up. And there's, I call it the Dune thing where you've always got a person there to put the scale in perspective as well. Yeah, of course the production has taken a jump up, but I feel like that's probably a key point of the new directive, and I think it works wonders. It's a correct directive to have. It's working wonders. The main event was Jey Uso, Ricochet and Andrade versus Judgment Day. Really, the only interesting thing was that JD had one hell of a welting after the accidental punch earlier. Fair to say, the lad with the Super Bowl indents in his big head was quite possibly a weakness for the baddies. A perfectly fine 8 minutes or so, as in he would be glowing red were he a video game character. A perfectly fine 8 minutes or so, letting us see Priest play faction leader in action ahead of LeFrance, teasing our title match happenings with Jay reversing out of the Razor's Edge. JD costing the champion with bad ideas, like, hey, he's got a boo-boo. Don't hate on him, Damien. He's a good little Irish boy, really. He's good, I'm honest. Jey Uso getting the win ahead of Backlash. Spear and splash to Balor for the win, so he's definitely losing. I mean, not much of a main event, and the draft itself had kind of run its course at that point, and it's like, oh, we need something to cap off the show. Sure, this'll do. It puts some things in focus, and it establishes some nice kind of faction balancing, but not a lot to write home about. Other notes, Candice LeRae also continuing to ease more and more into a new role nicely. We'll see what happens with her on SmackDown. Final social media drafts, Creed Brothers and Ivy Nile, Dunn and Bate, Dijak, Party Girls and Odyssey Jones. Remember him to Raw? Odyssey Jones, possibly the first man to be drafted to Raw, complete an entire year on the roster without featuring once and doesn't get released. Instead, he's drafted to Raw again. It's not a JTG, because JTG was like, he'd do the odd squash match, and he'd actually been on TV before. Odyssey Jones has never been on Raw. Unless he was in, like, on Raw Underground or something that I'm completely forgetting about. But yeah, this version, this Odyssey Jones has not been on Monday Night Raw. and he's been signed for an entire year, and he got signed and he got drafted again on social media. Also, Giovanni Vinci getting drafted to SmackDown after getting kicked out of Imperium. Tegan Nox and Apollo Crews joining him too. I think Apollo Crews has maybe done one or two squash matches and that's it as well. But that was the end of the draft. For me, the draft format is incredibly anticlimactic in its presentation. The format itself needs a complete overhaul. The way it's structured makes no sense to me. There's no surprise element. There's no hyping element. There's a little surprise element. What a surprise element that is taken out by the spreadsheet email presentation. And then there's the fact that there's just, it's not a very entertaining way of doing it, which also means you're not generating any hype to watch the next show or to see the changes kick into effect. And of course, the main other main problem is the fact that these are all like, it felt like minor swaps and whatever. At least on Roy, got whole factions jumping over, so it did feel like there were those changes. And he got the thing of the rookies getting called up with three NXT people instead of the two, and that did help with the overall vibe. Roy got a much better reception, but really for me, like the whole thing still had the exact same problems. So I wouldn't say Raw was any better than SmackDown, because the draft has the exact same issues. There's just way more entertaining and hype-building ways to do this. If you're going to do it like this, it's just so incredibly boring. But you know, it hits a Google SEO, so who really cares? Anyway, that brings me to the end of the review. I've talked way too long about all this stuff. I'm busy for all of Thursday, so I'm recording this a day earlier than normal on Wednesday because I'm busy on the Thursday. It's one of the days when I'm going to be incredibly busy, and then I'll be knackered the day after for my editing. So, you know, there you go, future me, take that. Anyway, with that, what did you think of the draft? Hit me up on the Social Suplex Discord or on Twitter at the Damn and Bacow. I never remember to put on my Twitter. That's Damn as in Damn. That was my Lords of Pain plug. Not done that in a while. But also, yeah, on the Discord is probably where it's best to hit me up. Go to Imps Adventures thread on there, or whatever. Most of us are just chatting in each of the threads anyway, so if you're on the Discord, you'll see all of us just in everyone else's threads and where we're talking. Anyway, with that, I say thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciate it. Never take it for granted. I'll be back next week to talk about Backlash and Monday Night Raw. So with that, I bid you adieu. Au revoir. Doing it French. Au revoir. Au revoir.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.